Tonight's shir is dedicated to Le'ilu Nishmas Betzalel Ben Yitzchak. As we move on to Parshas Truma, the second half of Sefer Shmos, for many perhaps not as exciting, not as dramatic, not as many storylines as we have in the first half of Sefer Shmos, but nonetheless, as we'll see this evening, extremely important for our daily lives of growing and what we can learn from the Binyan HaMishkan. The idea of the Mishkan is found in the Ramban in his introduction to Sefer Shmos. The Ramban is bothered with the question that why is Sefer Shmos called Sefer HaGeula if the Geula already happened? So what is the second half of Sefer Shmos? So the Ramban explains that the idea of ultimate Geula means a place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu can dwell, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu can have his Hashras, Hashchina, where he can feel his presence in this world. And that takes place in the second half of Sefer Shmos, beginning with Truma, Tetzava, Kesiso, Vayakab Kudah. These parashiyos are where HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally has a home. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a home, then we are zoiche to the real Geula. So that's the idea of the Mishkan. The idea of the Mishkan was a place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu can have a place, a dira b'tachtoinim, a place where he can live, so to say, in this world. But the theme of giving is obviously found very heavily in this week's parasha. The word Truma means to give, and the opening part of this week's parasha is all about giving, donating. But perhaps Klai Yisrael in this week's parasha learns also something very important. They learn about places that have intrinsic Kedusha. Before Har Sinai, Klai Yisrael never really saw Makim HaKadosh. They didn't see that in Mitzrayim. They weren't exposed to this concept that a place, that an area, that an object takes on a certain Kedusha. When they went to Har Sinai, they learned they can't go up to certain parts of the mountain. They were mukbal, they were controlled, they were limited. They understood, perhaps, that the mountain has Kedusha, and the mountain's Kedusha passed, but the Mishkan and the Kelim have intrinsic Kedusha. And Klal Yisrael has to learn the importance of injecting into an object, injecting into a building, injecting into a structure, Kedusha that is lasting. And as well as we'll see that this week's parasha also has much references to the concept of Torah, to the Chashivas HaTorah, to the idea of Torah. The Svara points out that the whole idea of a Mishkan was only due to the Chet Egel. If Klal Yisrael would have never sinned in the Chet Egel, there would have been no need for the Mishkan. Mishkan was only because we were not zeiche to live in a perfect world. As Rav Pam explains, it's like oxygen. You should be able to just go out and breathe the oxygen wherever you are. But sometimes if the oxygen is not clear or you have a breathing problem, you can only get oxygen in certain places, certain rooms, certain areas. So if it's Dr. Pam, we weren't zeiche just to open up the door and see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We lost it. Therefore, we needed to go to a building where we can reconnect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's interesting, Rabbi Rudinsky points this out, that why is there so much discussion on a building which by definition was merely temporary? The Mishkan wasn't the final resting place. And according to the Svarna, the Mishkan was only a secondary plan. It was only because we didn't go into, because we did the Chet Egel, we need the Mishkan. So why is there so much written, so many psukim and parashiyos about a temporary building? And he says over a story when he lived in Muncie by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky davened in a shul. And there was a shul in a basement where Rabbi Yaakov used to daven, and they were doing construction, temporary work on the shul, and they were putting up some sheetrock. And it was only for a few weeks, a few months, and Rabbi Yaakov insisted that they paint it a certain color. And they asked Rabbi Yaakov, they said, but it's temporary. Rabbi Yaakov said, I know. So even things that are temporary are kaddish, but the question is why? So maybe the idea is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us how to react to things of Kedusha. Maybe they won't last forever, but for the time that they're here, we need to learn, we need to become familiar how to interact, how to be noyig with Divrei Kedusha. We didn't really have this lesson before. This is the first time we got to see these things. Objects of Kedusha, Makim HaKadosh, places that have Kedusha. And that maybe that's why there's so much time and effort into the Mishkan, even though it was temporary, Avada was temporary. But nonetheless, it got a lot of time in the Torah, because it's a lesson for all of us that we need to understand. This was the first time Klal Yisrael learned what does it mean to interact, even if it's fleeing, even if we'll lose the Kedusha, you'll move. But nonetheless, it's important to value Kedusha at the moment. Chazal tell us that the Mishkan was never destroyed. Mishkan's even around Ad Yom Hazeh, we just don't know where it is. But the two Batei Mikdashim were destroyed. Why is that? So the Mefarshim say, because the two Batei Mikdashim were built not with the same level of Kedusha as the Mishkan was built. The first Beis HaMikdash was built by Goyim, even some Goyim built the Beis HaMikdash. And maybe it wasn't completely for the right reasons, but since the Mishkan was built, Mamish B'Kedusha U'B'Tahara, the highest level of Kedusha, with all the purest of Machshavas, that's why it was never really brought down, as was the two Bat HaMikdash. Rabbeinu Bechaya writes in his introduction to this week's parasha a very, very powerful lesson for all of us. Because the Pasuk in Mishlei, Pasuk says in Mishlei, Kichu Musarai V'Al Kesef. Says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, we have to have an attitude toward mitzvahs of Kichu, grab. The attitude towards Torah and mitzvah, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, is not, well, if it comes around and I'm not doing anything else and it's not an inconvenience, no, then I'll do a mitzvah, then I'll learn Torah. No, grab it. Grab it with an excitement. He writes, don't be lazy. And he says, and if you will be lazy, and you'll get around to do the mitzvah, you will not get 100% credit. You'll be nenashi, writes, because lemaisa you dilly dally. You know, if I give an example, your wife asks you to do something, and you delay it. You push off a day, 2 days, 3 days, and then finally at the end of the week you do it. And you're expecting a big reward. You tell your wife, look what I did. And her response to you is, I told you to do it a week ago. But I did it, you'll say. And she'll say, yeah, but I wanted you to do it a week ago. Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, it's the same thing here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to see the excitement in you. He wants to see you jumping and running and looking, not just, oh, I got around to doing it. Then Rabbeinu Bechaya writes that, as the pasuk says, Loisasit iti elahei kesev izah. Don't make gods out of gold and silver. Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, it's such a gevaldic idea. He says, don't, when you're davening to me, don't be thinking about your kesev izah. When you come to daven, don't be thinking about the business deal. Don't be thinking about the business meeting. Don't be thinking about the fact that the markets are down now because of the coronavirus. Don't think about that, Dr. Rabbeinu Bechaya. It's about me now. Now it's about me and you. It's not about business. Which is, I find it, perhaps when people daven with their phones, sometimes I guess if you have no sitter available, so it's good to use your phone. But I feel like sometimes when you daven with your phone, it just leads to that idea. If something pops up, you scroll, you move your hand this way, next thing you know, you're already in the email. Forget thinking about the email. You're pushing, reading the email while you're davening. So I don't want that. Keep davening. This is our time. No mixing business. And then Rabbeinu Bechaya says, that's chat on that pasuk in Mishlei. Kichu musarai, grab mitzvahs, v'al kesef, and not money. The whole world we live in today is a pursuit of money, and everyone's running after money, more money, quicker money, fast money. So Dr. Rabbeinu Bechaya, no, it should be the opposite. Kichu musarai, run after mitzvahs, and run after Torah, run after chesed. That you should run for. The money, yeah, that you can get to when you have the time. Exact reversal of the world we live in today, says Rabbeinu Bechaya. Our pursuit shouldn't be after money. Our pursuit should be for spirituality. The money, yeah, no, we'll get to the money when we have time. But then Nebuch, the world we live in, it's exactly the opposite. Money comes first, and Torah mitzvahs we get to, if we have time. Then Rabbeinu Bechaya adds that the Makom HaShechina, the purpose of the Mishkan was to have a Kadosh Baruch Hu's dwelling b'seiser. In at Har Sinai, it was open, it was begoli. You saw Hashem openly. Now the Mishkan was a different type of relationship, to have a Kadosh Baruch Hu more b'seiser. The Ramban writes that the idea of the Mishkan was is that coming off of such an intense relationship, such a panim al panim relationship that we obtained at Har Sinai, we needed to continue on that relationship somewhere. We needed to, you know, continue that feeling and that closeness. So that's the idea of the Mishkan. The idea of the Mishkan is supposed to duplicate the same type of idea, the same type of feelings and relationship and closeness that we obtained at Har Sinai. We try to use that same feeling and relationship in the Mishkan. The Beis HaLevi points out what is the connection between the end of Parshas Mishpatim and the beginning of Parshas Truma. We've quoted this Beis HaLevi many times in the past. It's a famous Beis HaLevi, but it's worth mentioning again and again. It says the Beis HaLevi, because the Kosh Baruch asks us in this week's Parsha to give a donation, says the Beis HaLevi, before you start giving donations and writing checks and making pledges, you got to first learn Mishpatim. You have to first learn what's your money. We have to first know what is your money? What am I allowed to be giving away? Is the money that I have in my checking account my money? Maybe it's really your money. Maybe I stole. Maybe I did something questionable. Maybe I owe you money. Maybe I have a debt. Maybe I have this. Maybe I have that. It's very easy to give away money that's not yours. The Torah demands of us that we have to give away money before we can discuss making donations. We have to first read Parshas Mishpatim. Find out if the money's mine. We don't believe in the steal from the rich to give to the poor. Contrary to Bernie Sanders, we don't believe that just because someone's rich, you should just take their money and give it away to other people. That's Gneiva. And contrary to many people, Gezalakum is still Asr. It's not permissible to steal from people. It's not permissible to steal from the government. It's not permissible to steal from Goyim. All that's not allowed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want our tainted money. When the money is obtained, Shalekidin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want our money. He doesn't want us doing questionable business dealings and then running and open, donating it to a shul, running and donating it to yeshiva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want that. Says the Beis HaLevi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants clean, pure money. If a person worked hard and a person made money, great. Then we have a lot of respect for such a person. But if a person stole the money, or he did things that are halachically questionable, or maybe even serious halachic issues, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't give me your money. Therefore, says the Beis HaLevi, that's where Parshas Mishpatim is the intro to say Parshas Truma. Before you can start giving donations, you got to make sure that the money is your money before you start donating it. So we'll open up at the beginning of the Parsha. So it says, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemer. Hashem says to Moshe, saying, Daber el Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, v'yikhli truma, and they should take from me a truma. So the Baal HaTurim points out that the word daber b'nei Yisrael was b'loshin pious. Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, be easy with them, go easy on them, be kind, be soft to them. Why, says the Baal HaTurim? Because you're asking them to part with their money. You're asking them to have a chasarin kiss. You're asking them to lose money. Whenever you ask someone for money, you have to be sensitive. You can't just be so out there. You got to understand it's going to be difficult for them. Asks Reb Henoch Leibowitz in his Sefer Chedushei Alev. He says, it's difficult for them. It's difficult for us to part with our money because we're very Gashmis people. We're talking about the Dor Dei over here. We're talking about the people who saw Eser Makis, they saw Kriyas Yamsuf, they saw Maimon Har Sinai, they saw Mechamas HaMolek. So for them it's hard to part with their money, if Hashem says. They were living in a different world than me and you. Secondly, the kasha, many Mefarshim ask, is they had so much money. When they left Bizas Yam, they were loaded she'en kamay. We can't even imagine. Loaded. So what would it cost them to give a few dollars to the Mishkan? Is that such a big nesoya? So Henoch Leibowitz says, you see from over here, from this Baal HaTurim, you see that if, even for the Dor Dei, it was a big nesoya. Many of us feel bad, we feel guilty, we feel like, oh, there's something wrong with us that because we have a hard time parting with our money. It's not nothing wrong with us. It means we're normal. We're human. The Dor Dei had a hard time parting with the money, says the Baal HaTurim. The Dor Dei had a difficult time. It was an Nisayon. They needed to be spoken to carefully. Kulshe came for us where we don't have endless amounts of money and we are not the Dor Dei. We don't see Yad Hashem as openly as they did. We should remember that it's a hard Nisayon. It's a very difficult Nisayon. Even though it's a difficult Nisayon, we have to overcome it at times. We come to the Yom Tov of Purim. We know the Yom Tov of Purim is known for giving tzedakah. We have Matanis Avyayinim, which was Niskabel as a time of giving. This is the time of the year, Purim, and then we have Pesach, we have Maschitin. We're getting into the season now of learning how to give and being accustomed with giving with others and sharing with others. And it's not always easy. You know, times are tough. Everyone is has a lot of expenses and responsibilities. But it was an assignment for them. It's an assignment for us also. But we can overcome it. We give what Chazal asks of us. We have Matos of Yoinim, there's a share, how much you have to give. And Moschitim has a share. And there's rules and regulations. And we give besimcha, as the Torah describes in this week's parasha. But Rashi quotes on the first pasuk, v'yikchu li. So Rashi, what does it mean take from me? Rashi says, l'shma. That needs to be l'shma. So the question is, what does it mean it needs to be lishma? Doesn't everything need to be lishma? We have a din that mitzvahs need to be done lishma. Mitzvah tzrichas kavana. When you do a mitzvah, you have to know what you're doing for the sake of what you're doing. What is over here, this idea that it needs to be lishma? So Reb David Kviat points out in the Sefer that, for example, if you build a shul, you build a yeshiva, so your mindset is, I want it to be a nice shul and a nice yeshiva. Why? For me. For the people. I want it to have a nice bathroom so people will like it, and I want it to be a nice catering hall so we can make money, and I want the chairs to be comfortable and the windows to be, because for us. Says Reb David Kviat, but that wasn't the Mishkan. The Mishkan wasn't about us. The entire makeup of the Mishkan was all for Hashem. Nothing to do with us. The whole building's purpose was not so we could have a place to daven comfortably. No. It was so Hashem could have a place to dwell in this world. Our personal interests played no role in the Mishkan. That's Lishma. Lishma means that the entire edifice, this entire building, was all what will make Hashem happy. Not what will make me happy, and Hashem also will like my shul. Therefore says Reb David Kriya, that's a big deal. to completely negate your own feelings and make it all about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that takes a big madrega. And that's the idea over here of Lishma. Rav Pam points out that, you know, we live in a world where we spend our whole life living mitoich shelo lishma balishma. We know, Chazal tells us, the Gemara records this, that there's a principle of mitoich shelo lishma balishma. Very often you have little kids, they don't really want to learn. Here in my community we have Ovos Ubanim, Matzei Shabbos in the winter with the boys. And my son this year started going, he's 6 years old. And at the end of the Ovos Ubanim there's pizza, and there's a story, and there's prizes. So I asked my son, why do you go to Ovos Ubanim? So he told me, I go to Ovos Ubanim because I like the pizza. That's why I go. So that's mitoich shelo lishma balishma. Obviously, I don't expect him at 6 years old to tell me he's going because of the learning, but we go because lemaisa he learns and he gets pizza. So it's an incentive program. We have this idea of incentive programs. Kids in yeshivas need incentive. The older they get, the incentives get bigger. You give them bigger prizes. You promise them trips and vacations and, I don't know, cruise ships. I don't know what else they promise the kids today. But Zot Yev Pam, there has to come a time and point where it stops being mitoich shelo lishma and it actually is lishma already. You can't spend your whole life saying, I'm going to be, it's all mitoich to get to lishma. And when's it going to be lishma? Says Rav Pam, there's got to become a time in life where we finally grow up and learn lishma. Not because anyone's going to give us a prize, not because anyone's going to make a big deal about us, not because they're going to, you know, give us an award, but because it's the right thing to do. The chashivas of lishma, says Rav Pam, has to be at some point obtained in our life. We can't spend our whole life the madrega mitoich shelo lishma balishma. Obviously, in the beginning, you start off like that. When your early years of development, you say mitoich shelo lishma balishma. But Zakhtar Rav Pam, there's got to come a time in life where we finally learn lishma and we do things lishma. There's a famous Tana de Belio quote in this week's parasha that says that right after Klal Yisrael said Nasav and Ishma, immediately following that declaration, Hashem said the yikhli truma. I'm asking you to give me a truma. So the Mefarshim all discuss what is the shaychus, what is the direct correlation between Nasav and Ishma and the Yichli Truma. So David Kriyat explains that the statement of Nasav and Ishma meant that we don't want to get rewarded for what we're doing. We're not anticipating, we're not expecting, we're doing it all for you. It's not about us. Nasav and Ishma was a complete testimonial, it's all about you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So says Rav David Kriya beautifully. So if you make that comment that it's all about me, Hashem, so now you can build me a Mishkan Lishma. If you're going to be thinking about you, so you can't build me a building for me because you're thinking about you. But now that you're telling me that you're totally negating you, and it's all about Hashem, it's not about you anymore. You're not even planning on getting reward for doing this. It's not what Lishma means. I'll do whatever you say, Hashem, because you're my Hashem. Says Rav David Kriya, now you're ready to move into the next phase. Now you can first talk about building a Mishkan Lishma, because now you're no longer self-focused on yourself, you're now ready to focus on HaKadosh Baruch. The other answer that Mefarshim give is that we made this big declaration, Nasav and Ishma. HaKadosh Baruch, whatever you say, we will do and we will listen. The only problem is you got to prove it now. How do you prove that? That's a big declaration. How do you prove it? So the first thing HaKadosh Baruch says is, the way you prove it is you write me a check. You really love me? You really will do anything for me? The way you can measure that love and that dedication and devotion is by asking us to do what is the most difficult, as the Baal HaTurim told us. It's give part with your money. It's easy to say you love me. It's easy to say you care about me. It's easy to say I'll do anything for you until you ask me to write a check. Therefore, the moment after Klal Yisrael said, Nasav Nishma, we love you, Hashem, right after that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let me see how much you love me. Just in the news today, there was a mayor from Baltimore who did some scam with a book that she wrote, and she's going to jail for 3 years. And she said, she was interviewed today, she says, I love the people of Baltimore. I don't know how much she loves them, I think she might have ripped them off financially. So it's very easy to say, I love you, as long as it doesn't connect to money. The moment the question is, prove your love via money, then the love ends very quickly. And the Medrash Kamat says it like this. The Medrash says that people say, I love you, I'll do anything for you, but you have to prove it. Where's the loyalty? How do I know? So a person could show it through the money. We also know that when a person uses his money, it shows what he values. It shows what's important to you. Where a person spends his money, and what he does with his money is very, very close to our hearts. Especially money that we work hard for. Back then, the money in the time of the Torah, they didn't work so hard for it, whatever. They got in business, yeah. But here, we work very hard for our money. Many hours, tough jobs, dealing with difficult people. And the money stays very close to us. We don't want to part with it. But when a person parts with it, you see what he values. When he gives it away to tzedakah, he gives meiser, he gives to his shul, his neighborhood, whatever he gives, even tuition to his yeshivas. It shows what he values. It shows what's important to him. The pasuk, the obvious question on the second pasuk in the parasha that all the mafarshim are bothered with, it says in the pasuk, speak to the bnei Yisrael v'yikhuli and they should take from you. So the obvious question is, you're not taking, but on the contrary, you're giving. So the standard answer that we all know is that when a person gives to charity, he's really taking. It may look like he's giving because the money's leaving his checking account and the check is being written from his account, but it's not true. You don't lose by giving tzedakah. You only gain. You gain a nitzchis, you gain a schar, you gain a reward that can never be taken away. The best investment a person can make with his money is to give it away. If you invest in business, there's a 50-50% chance it will go well or won't go well. You'll lose, you'll gain. When a person writes a check, he gives his money away to chesed, to tzedakah, different organizations, different needs, that money is 100% return. You know, there is no losing side to that money. It's only going to gain. Every time you give a present, you're giving meiser, you're giving tzedakah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're taking. You don't realize it. You think you're losing. You think you're worried because now your checking account is lower. You're not losing anything. You're gaining so much more. You're gaining nitzchias. This dollar that you would have used, you know, you give away these dollars, instead you're going to use for a coffee. So by the time you drink the coffee's gone. It's it. It's over. That was a good coffee, but it's gone. But these dollars that you give away to tzedakah, they last forever. They get the return is unbelievable. And they have a Zakta Torah, you're taking much more than you're really giving away. Pasuk says, Daber el b'nei Yisrael. So I think Mefarshim point out that b'nei Yisrael is coming to exclude the Erev Rav. That we didn't want the Erev Rav's money. The reason why we didn't want the Erev Rav is because, as we mentioned in the beginning, if we'd have the Erev Rav involved, then perhaps it would Migareya would take away from the Kedushas HaMishkan, from the purity of the Mishkan, from the Maila of the Mishkan over the Beis HaMikdash, and that would be affect its status of level of Kedusha. The Chassam Sofer points out that the way you should read this pasuk is the following. Da'bel b'nei Yisrael v'yichli truma me'ez kalisha she'ed v'enoli boy t'ikhuas truma. Says the Chassam Sofer, you know why you don't give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Because it's his. What are you giving to him? It's his. Hashem Ha'aretz U'Milayah, the whole world is his. Everything belongs to him. So it's like, it's giving back to HaKadosh Baruch. What does it mean to give? So he says, no, because me'ez kolisha she'ed v'enoli boy. You know what you could do? You could want to give. The heart, where your desire to give to HaKadosh Baruch is what you could give. You can't give the money, because the money is really his. There's no big deal to give the money. But the nidva leiv, the sincerity and the heartfelt want to give up, that you do give. Actually, when you give your heart, when you say, I really want to give this to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but as the actual ownership of it, you're not really giving anything to Hashem, it really belongs to Him. The Svarta points out that we didn't force people to give to the Mishkan. This was not a forced fundraiser. If you wanted to give, by all means. But it says, you have to want. If you don't want it, we don't force you. So Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, what is the difference between this and tzedakah? We know tzedakah, we force. Memashkin amal tzedakah, kaifin amal tzedakah. Why was there no kfi on the Mishkan? Secondly, explains Rabbi Soloveitchik, why is tzedakah called tzedakah? Tzedakah means righteous. This is not righteous. If I make a lot of money and you don't have money, me giving you money is not righteous. It's a chesed. It's not righteous. I make the money. Why should I give you the money? So Rabbi Soloveitchik explains, tzedakah means that it's the realization that Kadosh Baruch Hu says that the money's mine. Everything here is mine. The money that you make, even with all your hishtadlus, is my money. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu allowed you to have the money. And this is where we have to remind ourselves of the ever possible trap of koichi v'oitzim yodi. We fall into this mistake of thinking that it's all about us. We made the money, and we're so talented, and we're so smart, and we're so successful. None of it's about us. It's all about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us what He gives us. So if I said Rabbi Soloveitchik, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you money, and He says, I want you to share it with Achenu B'nei Yisrael, that's my money that I'm telling you, I'm asking you to spread the wealth. Because it's my money in the first place. Mashiach over here, the donations for the Mishkan wasn't stuck. The donations of the Mishkan, Hashem said, I'm going to come down here if you want me. If you don't want me, don't do me any favors. I'm not forcing myself on you. This was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of saying, if you invite me, I'm more than happy to come, and I want to come. But I'm not going to ask for an invitation. I'm not forcing you. This has to be nidvah slave. This has to be your own recognition and desire and want to have a Kadosh Baruch Hu in your world, in your Olam HaTachtonim. If you don't want a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world, a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to force you. Tzedakah will force you because that money needs to be allocated for all of Bnei Yisrael because it's not your money in the first place. But over here, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, the purpose of the Mishkan, I don't need to be here. I'm here for you, but if you don't want me, I'm going to leave. And therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu did not force any of the money for the Mishkan. The Meshech Chachma points out that the way you read the pasuk is the following. The pasuk says that you're supposed to take v'yikchu li truma, you should take me'ez kolish from all men. Points out the Meshech Chachma that you accept donations from all men, but you don't accept donations from all women. Why? Because there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, which is still negeya even today, that a lady is not allowed to give away large portions of money without consent of her husband. It's not right for a lady to give away big money, a lot of money of tzedakah without her husband's consent, and maybe she may not even be allowed to make major business decisions for the family without the consent of her husband, because it's his money. Now again, obviously today, the women make more money than the men, and therefore maybe it's their money, but that's a discussion. But al pi halacha and Shulchan Aruch, a lady is not allowed to give big donations without the consent of her husband. And therefore, not every lady can just write out a check to the Mishkan. Of course, their money is accepted, vada, but not every lady. She has to be, if she's a single girl who works, will take her money like a boy. But a married woman, it's not so posh. She needs to have consent from her husband before we could accept her donation. Something that hit me this year about the Mishkan that I never thought about in the past is that, and I saw Mefarshim ask this question, if we're building a place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why is it based on so much Gashmius? Now, we always taught, you learn Musa Svarim, it's not about Gashmius, it's about Ruchnius, spirituality, money's not important. Yet when it comes to building the Mishkan, Hashem says, you know what I want? I want gold and silver and fancy diamonds. What's going on over here? Shouldn't it all just be, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't want any of this stuff. Build me a spiritual Mishkan. So I saw that one of the truths that they give is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to give something that's very precious to you. When you part with something which is very precious, it gives a certain chashivas to the thing you're doing. What is the most precious thing that we have? Is our money. And when we part with our money, we're showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu where our heart really lies. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you want to really give mitoicha ava? You want to make this about love and about and giving to me? Give me something that really means to you, and that's your money. Perhaps the other answer is the classical answer that we all know. This is what the Chassidus Shesvarim talk a lot about, that our job in this world is to take the Gashmias and use it for Ruchnias. Everything here in the world is Gashmias. But instead of taking, you know, the Gashmias that the secular world uses just for Gashmias, we turn it into Ruchnias. You take a Shabbos meal, and that's not just food, it's food used for Ruchnias. Everything can be used for Ruchnias. So we take Gashmias, like Kesev, Zav, things that are normally stay away from, and we use them and we turn them into Ruchnias. Rashi points out that there were actually three things that were collected in this week's parsha. The Adonim, there was a collection for the sockets. That was a fixed amount. Then there was a collection for the Karbanas, that was a fixed amount. And then there was for the donation to the Mishkan, that was a free-for-all, you can give whatever you want. So I think what my friend discussed is that the Chashivas of the Adonim, why would the Adonim had to be a flat rate? Because not everyone's running to give money to the Adonim. The Adonim sat on the bottom of the floor of the Midbar. Not exactly a very glamorous thing to donate. But yet we know that Adonim are the foundation. And we know every good building needs a strong foundation. Everything in life has to have a very, very good foundation. That was the Adonim. But the kasha that Mefarshim ask is, why did they have to mandate the money for the Karbanos? Wouldn't people want to offer money for the Karbanos? Don't people want to have Karbanos? Because without Karbanos, what's the whole base of Mikdash worth? So it sounds like from Rashi that they had to mandate, require everyone to give for the Karbanos, because if not, people wouldn't give. So Meir Shapiro explained when he built his beautiful yeshiva in Lublin in the late 1920s, early 1930s, he said, you see from over here that people have a tendency to give money to buildings, not so much to individual things. Because someone asked Meir Shapiro, you built such a beautiful building, what about all the starving yeshiva brachim scattered throughout Europe? Why don't we give the money to them? So he said, because people don't give money to that. People like to give money for buildings. He says, look at this Rashi. The Karbanos no one was willing to give money to. But the whole idea of the Mishkan was to bring Karbanos. And no one's going to give money for the Karbanos? The answer is, says Rameh Shapir, yes. People have this funny idea in their head. They give money towards buildings. They'll give to the Mishkan. It's a building. They'll give to the yeshiva. It's a building. Not so much to the starving yeshiva bachrim scattered throughout Europe. And the Mepharshim point out, it's interesting, when the Torah goes to all the things that we need, so the Torah says we need to have the different materials, we need to have atzei shittim, if they have cedar wood, which we'll talk more in a second about, and we need to have shemen lamor b'samim l'shan ha'mishchah, the Torah says hamim, we need to have b'samim, and we need to have shemen ha'mishchah, and we need to have teres ha'sam. So Mepharshim asks, why doesn't anyone say, and we need animals, and we need bread for the lechem aponim? Aren't those essential also for the Mishkan? So the answer that they say is no. These products over here were essential for part of making the Mishkan. Why? Because you needed the shemen to be able to do the Mishicha on the Mishkan, on the Kelim. The Keteris HaSamim and the B'samim was to make it smell good. Because the Beis HaMelech smells good. It has smoke and it has B'samim. So these things were done to make the Mishkan into a Beis HaMelech, to make it look like Hashem's house. The lechem aponim and the bread was a secondary step. You know, you need it. And the animals were essential, of course. But these things were not just part of what you need in the Mishkan. It's gufo what made the Mishkan into a Mishkan. So Rashi's bothered with the question of where exactly did you find cedar wood in a midbar? So first of all, the Mepharshim point out cedar wood is very tough. And the Gemara says you shouldn't be so tough. The only time you're supposed to be tough is when it comes to ruchnis. When it comes to stupid things about Kashmias, you should, don't be tough. Don't be such an action. Don't be such a, I have to be right. You can give it to other people. Except when it comes to spirituality. Well, no, we know that the Atzei Shittim was used for the Arim. The Arim represents Torah. When it comes to Torah, then you got to be tough. Don't be a pushover. Someone comes to you and says, break this halacha, don't be machber on this. No, then you got to be tough. It comes over to you something stupid, something irrelevant, something that negates to spirituality. I've had to give in. Whatever you want, no problem. When it comes to Torah of Avodah, when it comes to Kadosh Baruch Hu, then we have to be tough. So Rashi quotes a Medrash. The Medrash says, "Uma'ayin oyelahem b'midbar." Where did they have wood in the midbar? So Rashi says that Yaakov Avinu saw with Ruach HaKodesh that Klai Yisrael was eventually going to build a Mishkan. So he brought the Arazim to Mitzrayim, planted them there, and told his children that when we leave, take this with you. So the Medrash says even further, this was Avram Avinu planted this. Avram Avinu planted this, Yaakov took that, brought it to Mitzrayim, and he told his children that when you leave Mitzrayim, I want you to take it. So Yaakov Kamenetsky has a very gewaldic idea over here. Yaakov Kamenetsky explains why Yaakov took what Avram Avinu planted, he brought that down to Mitzrayim. Why so many levels? Just plant it fresh in Mitzrayim. So Yaakov said these trees were there for the psychology of the Bnei Yisrael. Klai Yisrael needed to cling to a Mesorah that we will one day get out of here, and we'll have a Mishkan, and we'll have freedom, and we'll serve Hashem. But they needed to see something. They needed to see, those trees. These trees, this is what they cling to. This was what they held on to. Their dreams were wrapped in these trees. And therefore, Zot B'Yakov, they needed to have something to look back at and say, these are, cling to the Mesorah Midari Dairis. The importance of a Mesorah, I would add, that the generation passes down from one to the other, the Chashivas HaTorah is built on a Mesorah. What one generation learned from the next generation, Midar Lidar, it starts before us. And therefore, that's why Yaakov took from Avram Avinu and brought it down to Mitzrayim. The Taz has a kash, he says, there's a Gemara, I believe it's in Yuma, where the Gemara says that you were able to buy things, there were Meichram, people buying and selling things in the Midbar. So people buying and selling things in the Midbar, why couldn't they just buy wood in the Midbar? So the Ger Rebbe said, because then it's not going to be Lishma. You want the wood to be even cut Lishma, and therefore, that's why they didn't buy it in the marketplace. Instead, they waited to get it from. Instead, they preferred it from Yaakov Avinu. So the first Kli, HaMishkan, that we learn about is the Aron. And the Aron gets a lot of discussion because the Aron represents the Torah. We know that in the Aron was the Luchos. We know from the Aron is HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the Kruvim, and on top of the Kruvim is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us it's all about the Torah. Torah is the essence of our life. The Torah is our focal point and our most valuable point. The Mefarshim point out that when it comes to the Aron, it says Va'asu in the plural. All the other Klei HaMishkan are the singular. The Aron is the plural because we all have to be involved in Torah. None of us have an excuse not to be a Loimei Torah. Yes, there are those who learn more, there are those who learn less, and those who support Torah, all terrific. But we all have to be involved in Torah. And today it's hard not to be. Between the art scroll and Torah online and Shurim, it's very hard not to be involved in learning. But the Torah mandates that we all be involved in the learning. Why is the Aron the first of all the Kalim to be discussed? If anything, you would think that the Mizbeach should go first. The Mizbeach was actually used as a karbanis. The Aron wasn't really used in that capacity. So the Medrash says, just like HaKadosh Baruch created Ur in the beginning of the Bria, so too the Torah is first. It's a chashivas that we need to realize Torah has to be first and foremost, most important part of our life. And the Sinalper points out, and we made this Ur in Parshas Vayichi, in other places, is that the mistake that the Jews made when they first came to America, 1700s, 1800s, was they built a lot of beautiful shuls, a lot of beautiful Baltic Nesias, but they never built yeshivas. Torah needs to come first. Klal Yisrael's continuation, our success, our nitzchias, is dependent upon putting Torah first. Rabbi Fran points this out as well, I believe, that just like the Aron goes first, so too in our history, very often we see that the Torah will be sent ahead of a galus. Torah was planted already in America before American, right before Churban Europe. Right? The seeds were starting to be planted, the Gedolim started to come. Moshe Feinstein came, Rabbi Kotler came, other Gedolim were here, Rabbi Salvechik and others were here. They're already Gedolim starting to be here before the galus of Europe. Because Torah precedes the galus. Torah is always the first thing. Torah comes first. Right? Yaakov Avinu sent Levi down to build yeshivas. Torah always has to come first. Very often in our history, you see the seeds of Torah being planted before the next stage or the next phase in our life. Chazanish used to say he could see on the face of a Jew if he didn't learn Torah that day. That's what Torah is. Torah is who we are. Torah is what we're all about and what this life is for. But the Mefarshim point out, the Baal HaTurim again and others, that if you look at the measurements of the Aron, it's all in halves. It's Amasayim V'chetzi. It's that's the Arko. Everything is in halves. Why is everything in halves? So the Baal Turim says, all the measurements of the Aron were all in halves. Why? If a person wants to learn Torah, he has to make himself lower. He has to make himself a half. He's not a whole gavra. He's a half a gavra. This can be understood in two ways. This could be understood in the stammer that you don't think you're so amazing because you learn Torah. You have to be a shval rach. You have to be modest. But it could also mean that don't think because you learned some Torah, all of a sudden now you know everything. There's always more Torah to learn. There's never a shortage. You learned a little bit, good, you got to learn more. You learned today's daf, okay, you got to learn tomorrow's daf. You got to learn Kol HaTorah Kula. Then you got to learn Shas HaPoskim, and Rishonim and Achrayim, and Talmud Yerushalmi, and whatever else is to learn. There's so much out there. We're always a half. We're never complacent in our learning. They say about the Maram Shik, that the Maram Shik on his deathbed was crying. He was very in pain. There was a lot of pain before he died. So they asked the Maram Shik, why are you crying? He said, because he thinks that the reason why he's having so much pain now is because of all the bitter Torah that he had throughout his life, which is unbelievable for us to think about. The great Maram Shik, Talmud moving from the Chasam Sofer, one of the great Rabbanim in Hungary, during a very difficult time in history, he Mevatel Torah. He didn't have an iPhone to play with. Where was he without the Torah? How could that be? But the Maram Shik realized that his bittul Torah is going to cause him all this pain. Because Torah, there's so much to learn. There's endless amounts of Torah that we need to cover, that we need to learn, we need to see. The Baal HaTurim has another interesting comment. He says that the word Truma is Torah Mem. You look at the letters, it's Torah Mem. So Rav Moshe Bick explains that even after all the Mishkan, and after all the Hashras HaShchina in the Mishkan, we need Torah. We still need the Torah to bring down the Shechina. Kosh Baruch Hu's Mashma Shechina B'Torasei. It's all about the Torah. It's not about a building. It's not about a structure. It's all about the Torah. Chaim Kanevsky points out that here when the Torah discusses the Aron, the Vav is there. And in the later Parashias, in Pekudei, Ve'Yakal Pekudei, when the Torah discusses the Aron, it's Chaser. So Chaim Kanevsky explains, because here, before we did the Chatei Egel, the Torah is 100% pure. After we're going to do the Chatei Egel, it's going to be Nifkam. And therefore, the Vav becomes, the Vav is taken out, it's no longer a full vav. We know that on top of the Aron were the Kruvim. The Gemara says the Kruvim were Pnei Yenoikim, the face of children. So the Shmozovsky says that the message over here is that we have to realize that when it comes to Torah, we sometimes have to be like a child. Our children have an excitement, they have an eagerness, they're willing to hear, they're willing to listen. Adults are so caught stuck in their ways, they don't want to change, they don't want to grow, they don't want to roll with the punches. Nah, this is who I am, take me or leave me. So Dr. Shmozovsky, when we want to grow and learn, we have to be a little bit like a child. We need to be able to have that childish feeling to us, that we're able to learn new things and grow and be exciting and be fired up when it comes to Limud HaTorah. Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, the famous Slobodka Rosh Yeshiva, pointed out, and Rabbi Yaakov used to say this over a lot also, but he probably heard it from Rav Moshe Mordechai when he was in Slobodka, that we find another place in the Torah where the Torah discusses Akruv. Rashi says that on the gateway into Gan Eden. Rashi says there was also a Pnei Kruv, and Rashi says those Kruvim were bad. Those Kruvim weren't good. So says Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, what's the difference between the Kruvim and the Kruvim there? He said the Kruvim here were with Torah. A Kruv, a child without Torah, can be evil, can be terrible. A child with Torah, with proper chinuch, is the greatest thing in the world. The difference is the Torah. This Kruvim was connected to the Torah, that Kruvim was not connected to the Torah. Pasuk says about the Aron, it should be covered on the inside and the outside. The Gemara says that a Talmid Chacham needs to be toichei kibaroi. His insides have to be like his outsides. Which means he has to be the same way on the inside, he has to be on the outside. And I think the Pshat is the Torah, we spoke about this very many times. Torah is supposed to change who we are. Torah is supposed to go through us and change who we are. We're not supposed to be the same people. It's supposed to make us more compassionate and more caring and more giving and more sensitive. That's what the Torah is supposed to do. And therefore, we learn about the idea of our own Torah from the structure of the Aron. We find something unique about the Torah that by the Aron that you're not allowed to remove the Badi Ha'aron. So one of the Pshatim are that the Badi Ha'aron are the representatives of those that support the Torah. Just like you're not allowed to remove the badim, the poles of the Aron, those who support the Torah, those who carry the Torah, will never be disconnected from the Torah. So Avada, we mentioned before, everyone has to learn Torah. But there's always a certain chashiv is given to those who support the Torah, those who carry the Aron, those who carry the Torah. What does it mean to carry the Torah? Support the Torah. But the Mefarshim point out, the Aron carried itself. So those people who think they're supporting the Torah, it's really the other way around. You think you're giving the money to the Torah? No. The Torah is carrying you. You think you're the one supporting the Torah? No, it's the reverse. Your money is going, you think it's all about you. No, Torah is carrying you. The chashivas, although you're giving the money, but the Limud HaTorah is what's really supporting you. We always say over the famous Maaseh from Blazer Gordon. So Gordon had a father-in-law who promised to support him for 5 years. And at the end of the 5 years, his mother-in-law said, okay, that's it, let's cut off the support, and he'll go get a job, he'll get a rep on his job. And he always was going to do it, and it never ended up happening. Finally, they came to the point where Blazer Gordon found the Rabbanis job, the support was going to come to an end, and he wanted to go say goodbye to his in-laws. Right before he left, his father-in-law dropped dead, and had a heart attack, and he died. So the mother-in-law started screaming, it's all my fault. All these years I thought that we were supporting Blazer, we thought we were supporting him, it was the other way around. He was supporting us. Our money to him was really coming the other way around. And that's the same thing also. Those who carry the Aron, they think they're supporting the Torah. No, the Aron carries itself. They're supporting you. You're giving money to Torah. Your life and your success is all mitla taloi in the Aron itself. One last message over here about the Klei HaMishkan. Say, I heard from Rabbi Sabalovsky. A beautiful idea. We know in the Mishkan there's a bunch of different kelim. We have the Menorah, the Shulchan, the Aron, and the Mizbeach. And the Aron is in sight. Comparative, you could see the Aron and you see the Shulchan. So before we see the Vart from Rabbi Sabalovsky, Rav Pam points out that the relationship between the Shulchan and the Aron reminds us, Shulchan represents Gashmis, the Lechem upon him represents physicality, Lechem, physical. That a person has to remember when he's thinking about, he's focusing, he's picking a career of the Shulchan, he's thinking about a job, think about how it's going to reflect his Aron. How will this allow me to learn more Torah or allow me to learn less Torah? How many people have chosen careers because they'll be able to learn more if they take this career versus that career? That means you look at the Shulchan with the backdrop of the Aron. You see the shulchan, you say, okay, I got to get a job, I need to support my family, but the Aron is in sight. I want my job, I want my family, I want my kashmis to be all about the Aron. But Rabbi Sablovsky added one more nekuda. He said that you have that, and you have to ask yourself, he said it a little differently. He said, you have to ask yourself, when you're dealing with your shulchan, when you're dealing with your gashmis, when you're dealing with your business, is my business dealings, is my business, his askus, is it in line with the Aron? Does the Aron agree to what I'm about to do? We mentioned last week that some companies have Rabbanim on staff before they make any big business deals. So here we're saying that when you look at the shulchan, you think about your gashmis, you think about your business, you say to yourself, before I make this deal, what does the Aron hold about this? And if the Aron says this is not right, this is against Torah, then you have to mamash make a mizbech, you have to sacrifice, you have to give up, you have to say, I'm going to nix this deal, I'm not going to go through with it. If the rabbi says no good, it's no good. So the three kalim, these three kalim are all representative of our life all the time, not just in the Mishkan. We have to have a shulchan, we have to have a physical world, we have to have the Aron, the Torah is always in sight, and we have to sometimes make sacrifices. And these kalim, I think Rabbi Salvechik says, these kalim are not just in the Mishkan, they're supposed to be in our own homes. We have to live a life in our homes with these three elements of the Aron, the Shulchan, and the Mizbeach. We have to make sacrifices. Sometimes if we think it's not right, we're not going to go on this vacation, and we're not going to give our kids this because we think it's not right, and it takes sacrifice. So these three kalim HaMishkan are not just objects in the Mishkan, but they're really messages and lessons for our life in every single day, in every year, in every time in life. And these are really timeless messages for all of us.